Hello, this is Dan Le Batard. You know, if you've been listening to this show or even before this show a long time ago, how much I enjoy talking to John Amici. He makes us sound a lot smarter around here than we are. And so I decided when I saw what Dwayne Wade did with his child, his daughter, where he came out publicly and supported transgender efforts with a 12-year-old as a clinical psychologist and someone who knows a great deal about the effort required to be a good parent, I thought that John Amici was somebody that we should talk to and also play Stump the Meech with him because you guys enjoy that. And I found what happened in this Stump the Meech to be shocking and delightful. I don't think I've ever laughed harder during a Stump the Meech where we offer Stugatz's mispronunciations to John Amici, and then he tries to guess them. He's never won, even though he thinks he has. He has never won the game. We throw him five more new Stump the Meeches in this conversation, but I think you'll find interesting what it is that John Amici has to say about everything regarding Dwayne Wade and parenting. Before we get to that, though, Mike, who's sponsoring this week's South Beach Session?
Dan, South Beach Sessions this week is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/beach. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find the people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, our listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/beach. That's ZipRecruiter.com/beach. B-E-A-C-H, ZipRecruiter.com/beach.
All right, so let's get started here. One of the smartest men I've ever met inside or outside of sports, John Amici. John Amici, as I often tell you, is one of the most brilliant people I've ever met inside or outside of sports. He's had a lot of success as a clinical psychologist and a corporate changer of cultures, and he was an NBA player for many years. But it's low on the list of resume accomplishments. And I wanted to bring him on here to talk about what Dwayne Wade, Gabrielle Union, and Zion, now Zaya Wade, because I thought it was fairly seismic. And so John joins us now, and I appreciate that you're doing so. John, I haven't talked to you about this, but I'm always interested to talk to you about subject matter that makes people uncomfortable. And this one does, because there are a whole lot of folks out there that don't want a 12-year-old telling them about what their sexuality is. So I open the floor to you and just ask you initially what your thoughts were when you saw this happen.
I thought the video was beautiful. I really did. I thought it was beautiful because of its understated nature. The fact that it, though I think people might take it as preachy simply because of the age of the vessel delivering the message, I thought the way that it was done was so wonderfully understated. Here you are, dad and child, golfing. And in the midst of that, quite a profound set of statements made about both Zaya's own identity and how other people should feel about their own identity and how people should feel free to express their own identity. And then even in the midst of that, Dwayne Wade bringing up the fact that doing that can come at cost, and an answer that came from a child that suggested that whilst they're aware of the cost, and sometimes it's quite egregious, that it was worth it in the long run. It was an incredibly mature conversation. Not only do I not think enough dads have that kind of that depth of conversation with their children broadly, but I think sometimes we just don't allow the opportunity for young people to speak in the profound way that they can and contribute in the way they can. Because I don't think, as much as I'm sure Dwayne Wade and that family are tremendous in terms of their parenting and their relationships, I don't think this is somehow a magically unique young person. I think it's just a young person whose voice we happen to hear because of the fame of the father and mother.
Well, what do you make of the support system, though? Because one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is not just this, but I wanted to talk to you about parenting in general. And the last time you were on with us, you were talking about the idea that if a parent is sitting there hoping that their child and rearing their child to live up to their expectations for what they should be, that that parent has failed. I thought that what Dwayne Wade did in admitting his vulnerability, admitting that he doesn't know very much, but his first job is to support and get informed, I thought Dwayne Wade was brave there, because I can see in the locker room that one not flying, that in 2020 even, that one still not flying in 2020.
I mean, I don't think it's in the locker room it doesn't fly. I think it doesn't fly most places. I think most people think, most parents have that's unfair. I think a lot of parents have this perception that what they're supposed to do is shape and mold a child, their child, into some version of an image of either who they are, if they are truly successful, or who they wish they'd been, if they were not quite as successful as they'd once hoped. They try and steer them in directions that avoid risk and danger, for sure, but oftentimes it's avoiding risks and dangers that are challenging to the parent, as opposed to understanding what would actually be challenging for the child. I think oftentimes with parenting, people think it's a job of making sure, it's really a legacy job. It's a job of making sure that when we are dust, there is something left behind that resembles us. And that's not the job of parenting. It's not to produce, you know, we have moved along beyond the evolutionary animal that's supposed to just make sure that our genes survive. What we're supposed to make sure is that there's an autonomous, healthy, mentally and physically young person who is going to move through this world and is going to be able to navigate their own surroundings and understand and create their own destiny. Now, that's the job of a parent. It's not to produce a clone that people will look at and then remember fondly the parent.
What do you think the majority of people, let's just make it an average for humanity, even though this is an impossible question to answer, confronted with a 12-year-old saying, hey, I'm no longer a son, I am your daughter. How is that going with all parents? Like if on an average, you understand what I'm asking, right? It's an impossible question to answer, but I really don't know. I'd like to think that I would just immediately be supportive and believe in my child and do nothing but love unconditionally, or I might get scared and not be my best self. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, and probably some combination of all of those things, right? So even the parents who, in the moment, they say the right words and they throw their arms around their child and remind their child that they will always love them and that their love is not conditional on the assignment of their gender or the name that they choose to use, but rather on the essence of who they are as a person. But unfortunately, most people, the moment you have identified that you're having a son or a daughter, in our heads, it's like in virtual reality, a timeline projects out that is very different for a girl than it is for a boy. And we start to plan these milestones and pivotal moments for a boy and different milestones and pivotal moments for a girl. Different jobs that they might have. We start imagining the partners that they might have in the future. You start imagining the grandchildren. It's like this thing doesn't go forward 5 or 6 years. It goes forward a lifetime, often beyond when you'll even be alive. And so when a child talks about being trans, for example, or that the gender that they know to be true is not the one that represents their biological self, what actually happens for most parents is that they immediately mourn, because what has happened to them is the death of not just a son, but of a son who grew up to be from a boy to a man, who got married, who had a career and a life, and all of that kind of crumbles before the parent. And that's why it's so challenging for that parent to be the very best person that they must be, and recognize that for a person, for a young person, to come to their parent and share something so dangerous is a sign that that child thinks that you as a parent are the right person to talk to. And so you can either behave up to their expectations, or you can behave in a way that they would fear in their worst nightmares, a parent who no longer looks at them like the person that they love.
It wasn't lost on you, right, that this was a black father holding a camera for his black son to tell us that that was now his black daughter. That was not lost on you, right?
No, no. I mean, I think part of the reason people think Dwayne is remarkable is because he's a black father doing this. And so somehow black fathers are not only generally absent in the minds of people, though we know that's factually not true. People imagine black fathers to be less emotionally literate, to be somehow more beholden to the impressions of their peers, so unable to make decisions that might make them unpopular with their boys. That's what we think about black fathers, because we're idiots, because society is stupid in this particular dimension, and it's laden with years of racism. But the fact is, I think that's partly why people are so surprised, is maybe the wrong word, but so enamored by this response. Even the people who are positive about it, they think it's colored by the fact that this man has color.
So do you see what Dwayne did as profound, or do you see sadness in the fact that what Dwayne did is just the basic, bare minimum requirement for the job description of being a dad? Love, support, believe. You can help create a child's future just by giving him confidence or her confidence along the path.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I honestly think this is exactly what your child would expect of you. They would expect in these moments where these are the moments that differentiate between good parent and bad, right? These are the moments where a child would expect, they would learn if they've never been sure before. They will learn in these moments of precious disclosure of identity. They'll learn whether their parent is the good parent that they'd always hoped they'd been, or is the bad parent that they'd feared. And I think what he's done is, it's not fair perhaps to characterize, and I think I probably would characterize it, welcome to being a parent, that's exactly what you're supposed to do, that kind of warmth, that kind of practicality, that kind of embracing of your child. But we can't also forget that it's not the experience of most children who don't come out as trans or bi or whatever else. There are children who don't get this kind of warm reception when they decide they don't want to be a doctor, when they decide that they want to go and be a ballet dancer instead of going to engineering school or whatever else. So it is a slightly higher bar than I sometimes choose to characterize it. But the beauty of this is role model 101 right there, just captured in a little 3-minute clip. The way that you can have the way, if nothing else, parents learned that you don't have to prepare for these profound conversations and, you know, have an intervention style, sit around your dining room table, the lighting's got to be right, everybody's got to, no. It can just be sat next to each other in a golf cart between holes. I think that's a lesson for parents. Don't think that there are big, profound moments where the right conversations must happen, because the opportunities for these are every single day, every single moment when you see that flicker in your child's eyes as they're about to head out the door to the school bus, when they rush upstairs after school, when you're out and about and you see them staring off into the middle distance, when they're shopping and they're distracted, that these moments come right there and then for you to have that little 3-minute intervention that makes them understand that you are exactly the great parent that they'd hoped you would be.
One of the things that I thought was great about what happened there is that you've got Dwayne Wade. What just happened there? What happened? What was that sound?
I heard a sound, and that is, per show rules, Dan, a fine. Was it your computer or Meech's?
No, that was Meech's computer.
That's definitely mine.
That's
me. I did that.
That's $5.
Okay.
That's my fault. $5. Oh, nice. Good use of the vernacular there.
Venmo me.
I will see. My computer's not really turning on right now, and I'm...
No,
not
but you quite. Have to Venmo him, and it's $5, and we'll just keep it moving. We don't have to stop there, even though it's serious subject matter. I can't wait to get to
that rule stops for nothing.
That rule stops for nothing, and I can't wait at the end here to get to a few Stump the Meeches, because some people might be tired of our droning about serious things. But one of the things, though, that I did find interesting about the golf cart moment, and I haven't talked to you about this, so I don't actually know how much you were shaped by being the fat gay kid who felt alone, trapped in his own body with a secret. I don't actually know how much that has to do with shaping how edgy you are, how successful you are, how dark you can be, and how intelligent you can be. But the permission that Dwayne Wade gave his daughter to not be alone with that, like, that is what to me was super moving, because it's like Dwayne doesn't understand it, but he doesn't have to understand it to respect it, and he doesn't have to understand it to love his daughter. And by doing so, he makes her not feel alone. And John, you know how many of these kids kill themselves because they feel alone.
Yep. They feel alone, and also they understand, they see, and now they don't just understand, they see clearly through the internet and others, the people who hold them in the utmost of contempt. And so there's something truly securing about, in this storm of commentary, people who would variously despise and want to kill this young woman, she has this safe haven right next to her dad, and she knows that safe haven is available all the time. I think there's something really profound about, people often think that you need to understand something in order to be useful, in order to be contributing, in order to be an advocate, and you just don't. You don't need to understand. There is this power in saying to someone, I don't know what it is that's going on with you, and I might not even be the person you want to talk to about it, but I just want you to know that here I am, and I am available and ready to listen and learn. There is something so deeply profound about that. And if parents can do that, hell, in the work that I do on a day-to-day basis, we talk to managers about this. You know, when you notice that person who's coming to work 2 days in a row and they've just been different than normal, and you go up to them and you say, I just want to tell you that I noticed, I saw you. I see that something's different, and I may not be the person you want to talk to about this, but know that I am available. And in the case with Dwayne Wade, it's having that in a parent, having it in a manager, having it in a colleague or a friend, all of this in a teammate, it just makes the most profound of differences. I told you before about Andrei Kirilenko. When he came over and to my house and invited me to his New Year's party and said I could bring a partner if I wanted to, it was just like, I see you. You know, you may not want to come to my party, but just know that you are welcome and I see you. It was an amazing experience.
I'm curious, because I don't know how much of the audience knows this story. You have done a lot over the decades, a lot of good work with children, with gay children. And I don't think the audience knows the story. And forgive me for dredging up something, but I want them to have the context of who you are and how you are and why you are. You were pretty shattered one time when you didn't quite get to a kid in time. And it shaped how it is that you have dealt with kids suffering with this kind of silent pain for a while. Can you tell the audience that story?
Yeah, I mean, there continues to be a kind of stream of people who reach out to comment, less now than there used to be, in part because I'm not famous, and in part because there are better resources out there. There are closer to home resources for young LGBT people. But there was a time when there wasn't really much out there, and people used to refer to me individuals that they thought could use a chat, even if they didn't really know why, because through my website and my blogs back in the day, people thought I was a person who would listen and hear and see people. And there was a point when I felt a bit overwhelmed by it, with the other responsibilities that I had. And I ended up in...
Because basketball is hard. It's hard. Basketball takes a lot of time.
It does.
It wears out the body. It doesn't allow you to be terribly lopsided.
It's not an excuse, though, because there was just a time, and the thing is, I don't know if I even told you this last time, but there was just a time when I was like, you know what? I'll get to that. But I did not respond with any real urgency. I'll get to it. And then I bang out a message, because here it is. It's been a week. It wasn't like months. It was just like a week or two. And I was like, right now, I'll get to that. I was in a better headspace. I don't know, maybe won a couple of games. And I reached out, and I was told that it was too late. Just that plainly. It was just too late. because this young person had killed themselves a day, 2 days, a few days previous. And that was it. That was it. I was too busy.
And how did you change your behavior after that?
Well, you can't make yourself into someone. You can't characterize yourself as someone that people can reach out to, and then when people reach out, be unavailable. That is true for parents. It's true for coaches. It's true for managers. It's true for friends. And so now I deliver what I promise. People reach out. I respond. And I respond appropriately, and I may not always be the person who can help them, but at least they know I heard them. But I'm not going to put myself in a position like that again, where something inconsequential, like playing basketball, got in the way of something truly consequential, like somebody just hearing, having, maybe it had been that 3 minute conversation, just 3 minutes. I see you, I hear you, and whether I understand it or not, know that someone has heard you and someone cares.
Can you explain to the people listening sort of, not the stats, not the numbers of how hard this is on transgender or gay kids to be alone with this and how often they harm themselves or are harmed by others, but can you sort of explain to people why it's so important to have Dwayne Wade? You, as someone who has said that if LeBron James wanted to, he could use the power he has to cure world hunger, that once you get to this level of fame and power, you can actually do meaningful things that save lives. You have said that, and I think people react like, what are you talking about? But you really believe that LeBron James could, if he dedicated himself to it, solve world hunger. And so when you see Dwayne Wade do this, and you pair that against kids killing themselves to end the pain, kids killing themselves, John, because that seems like a solution. That seems to hurt less than whatever pain they're in. How would you put all of that together?
I don't think LeBron James necessarily has the answers to, you know, the education problem in America or hunger and poverty in America. But what I do know is that he is a person with enough power to build a coalition that would make a difference. Perhaps more difficult now under the current president than under others, but he could do that. So Dwayne Wade has this disproportionate voice in all communities. Fans of basketball, fans of sport, fans of parents, black and white families, it doesn't matter. He's got this broad reach. And his measured, calm, simple coaching and questioning approach with his daughter is just easily replicable. It's something that you can look at and say, wow, I can do that. I can breathe, and even when I don't understand, I can talk. I think his ability, he's already saved lives with this. Because what people don't seem to realize is our identity is not just something that forms inside of us. It's not just it percolates up and one day we know everything we are. How we think about ourselves is actually made up of how we see ourselves reflected in the faces of the people around us. And so for a lot of LGBT kids, especially trans kids, what they see reflected in the faces, in the media coverage, in the church that they go to or mosque or temple, is contempt and disgust. It is a sense that these people are sinful and evil, and that gets incorporated. It's like when you give a kid Play-Doh or something like that at Christmas, and then by the time you get to a month later, encrusted in it is all kinds of muck and other stuff, because it just picks up what's around it. And young people are that impressionable, and every day, if you're a trans kid, you face some, usually man, on social media yelling about how he doesn't want, you know, predators in his daughter's locker room, as if that's what it's about. We're faced with people who say reprehensible, evil things about the extermination of LGBT people still to this day. You've got even good people who think that because laws have been passed that somehow the persecution of LGBT people has ended. And then you add into that elements of religiosity, elements of race, where if you look at the murders of trans people, the vast majority of those trans people are black trans women who've been murdered. exactly the demographic of Dwayne Wade's daughter. That's how powerful this is. Exactly the group that is most highly targeted amongst the trans community is exactly the example we saw of compassion and love in that golf court.
Why is that, what you just said statistically? Is that an inference that the black community or the religious community is less tolerant? Like, why is that happening? Why is that? Or is that also a reflection of, you know, white people killing because they can kill? And if you happen to be transgender and black, you're somehow less human than the average human.
Yeah, well, we already know black people are less human than the average human. So, I mean, that's been written into the Constitution at one point or another. So the idea that being both black, being a minority amongst a minority would make things worse shouldn't be surprising to people. Ask black women broadly in business. They don't just do worse than men in business. They do worse than white women in business, too, in terms of their pay gap and everything else. So the fact that there's this multiple identity element with black trans people will make it life more difficult. But it's not just as simple as black people are bigots or homophobes, because that's not the case. Most often when you look at the incidence of homophobia in the black community, it revolves around religiosity. It revolves around church teachings. And they are quite contemporary church teachings too, I would add. Old Testament revisited type stuff. And so since we know that black people have higher levels of religiosity in America, for sure, they tend to be more, that population tends to be more inculcated with some of these ideas about the roles of women and the roles of men and homophobia and all kinds of other stuff too. But it's not just as simple as if you're black, you're probably a homophobe, which is where people, I think, want to go with it.
I don't know if many people actually remember this because it was so long ago, John, but you on our show taught me what you were just talking about. This had to be, I don't know, 10 years ago, but the idea, I had no idea. I really didn't. I had no idea what was happening in the black community as it related to the religious stuff and the homophobia until it was taught to me by Tim Hardaway, coming on our radio show and saying appalling things about gay people in reaction to a book that you'd written coming out as gay. And I was stunned, John, stunned at the way the black community came down on me and was really mad at me for setting up Tim Hardaway. It's where I learned all of that.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that. I mean, you've talked about it before, how bad you felt, because even as he was talking, you knew that this was just going to blow up. And I told you I felt a sense of relief, because he wasn't speaking for the black community. He was speaking for a lot of men and women in America at that time, in 2007. He was speaking for a lot of people. It's simply that he'd done it in the most unsophisticated of ways. But to me, he was the voice of a huge number of people, and that was backed up by the fact that after he spoke, numerous people felt the need to reach out to me and tell me how much they hated me and that they were emboldened by Tim Hardaway. He speaks for us. And so I think it's important that we recognize that. I mean, just because he happened to have been a bit indiscreet in how he talked about it, it doesn't change the fact that it's not a black or white issue, homophobia. It's not about race. There are, you know, we can look at the data and realize that religion is a big element of it, and that some groups are more religious than others, and that really is the core of it. But there's also, and this is the reason that we can't give too many excuses to people. There's also just the yuck factor. That really is the bottom line for a lot of people with the LGBT community. It's nothing to do with religion or profound morality. It's simply that they think what you guys get up to, or at least what they imagine we do. I'm 50. Believe me when I say I might as well be 150 in the gay community. They imagine that what gay people get up to is yucky. And because of that, they hate them. And that's it. That's it. That's as profound as it gets. I think they're disgusting because of X, Y, Z. I was reading a journal article the other day where they were talking to men who had different kind of paraphilias, different kind of sexual challenges. And there's one man who'd never masturbated, and he never masturbated because he felt that touching his own penis made him gay. So that's the level that some people are at. It's just they don't imagine. They think that gay people are yucky. They think that trans people are yucky. And don't mistake, it's about misogyny too. How dare you take the best thing in the world, aka being a man, and turn it into the worst thing in the world, being a woman. And that's why trans women get killed and not trans men, for the most part.
I had not thought of that. When you mention that disgust, what do you say to the person who is disgusted and saying, look, a 12-year-old does not decide gender for me. Science does.
Yeah, I mean, a 12-year-old is not deciding gender for whoever that person is. I would bet a gentleman. They decide that for themselves. And nobody, you know, the 12-year-old trans kid, the 10-year-old trans kid, the 45-year-old trans kid, in the UK recently, a 50-odd-year-old television presenter who's been married for 27 years came out. And he's not deciding anybody else's sexuality but his own. So I don't understand why people are affected by other people's sexuality, because I generally don't walk down the street and feel impacted by the sexuality of the 90-odd percent of straight people who walk past me. It doesn't even occur to me. I never shake hands with a straight person and think, ew, what have you been up to? And then, you know, if they introduce me to their wife, go, ew, what are you two doing together? It just never occurs to me, because it seems odd that I would be that involved in the social and sexual dramas of another person. So it's odd to me that people are so interested in what gay people do when, you know, if you want the little inside secret, the secret is that most gay people are pretty boring.
To his credit, Tim Hardaway did get himself educated. And Tim Hardaway, one time in the bowels of the Miami Heat's arena, I had tears in my eyes when he came up to me and just said, and his behavior after this telephone conversation was always exemplary with me. But he said, look, this was on me, because he knew I was under it too. And he's like, this was on me. I take full responsibility for what happened there. I don't blame you at all. Like, I literally got tears in my eyes while he was telling me, just admiring him for not deflecting on that one, because it did hurt me to do this to him. Such, you know, I'm putting that in quotes. But let's play the sound for John, because I haven't heard it in a long time, of Tim Hardaway on the show talking about John Amici's book and John Amici coming out, and me asking him how would he feel if he had a gay teammate.
First of all, I wouldn't want him on my team, and second of all, you know, if he was on my team, I would, you know, really distance myself from him, because I don't think that's right. And you know, I don't think that, you know, he should be in a locker room while we're in a locker room, and it's just a whole lot of other things. So I wouldn't even be a part of that. But you know, it's stuff like that going on, and there's a lot of other people out here like that that's still in the closet and don't want to come out the closet. But you know, I just leave that alone.
You know that what you're saying there, though, Timmy, is flatly homophobic, right? It's just flat. It's bigotry.
Well, you know, I hate gay people, so. You know, I let it be known. I don't like gay people. I don't like to be around gay people. I don't, you know, I'm homophobic. I don't like it. It shouldn't be in the world for that, or in the United States for it. So yeah, I don't like it.
It's crazy to hear that in retrospect, but I do marvel, John. I don't know whether it represents enough progress, but through the Miami Heat, same locker room. For Dwayne Wade to be here, to go from that with Tim Hardaway to where we are with Dwayne Wade today, it's encouraging at the very least.
It is encouraging. It is encouraging. I just think that people shouldn't be fooled into thinking that the voice or the mindset that was voiced by Tim Hardaway back then has somehow gone away. It has simply become far more sophisticated. People use different words, just like they do with racism. They use different words to isolate, to disenfranchise, to other black and gay people and women. We're just people. Bigots are more sophisticated nowadays. I mean, the thing that frustrates me about that tape, about that audio, and Tim Hardaway's rehabilitation is the fact that, and I don't know if you know this, I constantly see these things in the media about his rehabilitation and about how he's reached out to this person and that person. And all I know is that, what is it, 20 years now? More than that, since that tape? 23 years since that tape. I have not ever received so much as an email from him to say, I'm sorry. And to me, that's the interesting part. Because apologizing generically and apologizing to other people, to other LGBT people, is a good thing. But I just think that it would have been nice if he'd have reached out to me, because I was the one who got death threats after that.
I'm going to have to set that up then. Because I know that Tim Hardaway has learned a great deal of things, and I know Tim Hardaway to be accountable, as I told you. So that's an oversight that I hope that I can help in correcting for some healing. I'm going to try to do that. Before we do that, though, I got to get to some light stuff here, John, because this has been some heavy.
Otherwise, people are just going to be slashing themselves.
It was some heavy lifting here. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of laughing. It was very, very deep. Mike, what happened back there?
You want to give me a little bit more separation between that and what we're about to do?
No, I don't. We can filibuster here. We're going to have some fun here. This is the only part that many people are going to just fast forwarding
to this right now.
Thoughts on how the new Star Wars trilogy ended?
I gotta tell people at the front end that you don't know when it is that Stump the Meech is going to appear during this podcast, just to keep them around through all the heavy stuff.
You could tell he exactly. Had you could tell he had thoughts on how the Star Wars trilogy ended.
I did. I have slight man crush on Mark Hamill. I think he's amazing, both as an activist politically and otherwise. So it's hard for me to say anything bad about anything that he's even remotely a part of. But I thought the ending was good enough, and that's all I can say. It just, I quite like Rey. I think in terms of a character, she's right. I'm kind of tired of the Star Wars fanboys complaining because this Jedi happens to be a woman, as if that's never happened before. But I just think it was missing some crucial elements of camaraderie. It's hard to look at the Millennium Falcon with Han Solo, with Chewbacca, with the droids, with that cast there, with Leia and with Luke. It's hard to look at that and see it replaced by anybody else, even though I love the kind of Rey, John Boyega thing that was going on.
Mike, do you feel like you have enough of a tone shift now that we can?
Not at all, Dan. But let's just
all right,
go ahead.
Let's do it anyways. All right.
I'm ready. John Amici.
Can we just reiterate right now that I have won this
You've
game?
You've never won this game.
I've won this game once. You guys, I tell you what, you've burnt the tape, but I know it's true.
No, you have never won this. None of us remember you winning. We would have celebrated.
Oh, here we go.
We would have been amazed.
None of us remember.
So here's the first one. All he's got to do is get more right than wrong. We got five of them for him here. What is the first mispronunciation from Stugat?
Analysis.
I think I actually know this one.
Analysis.
See, either it's Dallas or analysis. And I want to go with, because it's farther away, I don't know. One more time.
Analysis.
See, I think it's Dallas, but that's too simple.
Analysis.
Analysis?
That's what I would have guessed.
Wow, spot on.
That would have been my guess.
Wow.
All right.
So my eyes started getting like saucers once he started thinking about Dallas.
Yes, but he did. I love that he talked it out and he ended up. No, what could be even more of a mispronunciation?
That's way too close for him. That's
right. Analysis.
Oh, the first one's always a softball.
Yeah, Chris says that one was too easy. Yeah. Chris thinks that wasn't hard enough.
Chris can keep his opinion to himself.
All right.
Whoa!
All right. One to Meech.
Give me the second one.
Formula.
I think I know this one.
Formula.
Okay, so this is... I hate this because it's jumping out at me immediately. So it's either formula, but... Having said that, I can't imagine a context in which Stugatz would have to say that word. Or a more sporty type descriptor word, formidable.
Oh, all right. You are overthinking this because I think...
Okay, so let's have it one more time.
Formula.
Maybe more than once.
Formula.
I think it's formidable.
Despite Dan trying to help you out, it is formula.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You overthought it.
I did. I was trying to help you. I was trying to help you cheat so you could have a victory. What's the third one now?
Draw.
Well, come on now.
Draw. Draw.
This is one of those where, like, a spelling bee, I want to hear that in a sentence.
Draw.
Well, that is clearly, obviously, the phrase Detroit Pistons center now of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Andrew Drummond.
Draw. Draw. Draw.
It's Andre Drummond, Dan. That's a fine.
Draw. Draw.
I've absolutely got nothing. Hold on.
Draw.
Drug.
Is that your final answer?
Nah, it's the wrong.
I would have guessed either drum or drunk.
Drawer.
Draw.
That's a Northeast thing.
Draw.
I just paid the fine.
That is a tragedy right there.
Really is. I'm sorry. So now this is getting hard. Hopefully he'll be able to get this one right so that number five is the big seismic moment.
Good guys two, bad guy one.
Hermaphrodites.
Oh.
Hermaphrodites. Hermaphrodites. Hermaphrodites.
Just keep playing because I.
Hermaphrodites. 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 Hermaphrodites.
Hermaphrodites.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
ah, right. Oh, there we go.
Of course. Oh, God.
But. What causes there to say that word in the course of a broadcast?
I don't know.
We have a lot of weird and finallys.
Hermaphrodites.
Okay, good. I'm back in. Everything's fine.
2-2.
This is huge.
Down to the final one.
I feel like that's one of the easiest ones you've ever given him.
Hermaphrodites.
What else could it possibly be?
I was gonna go with a permafrost.
It's such a good question. Yeah. What else could it possibly be?
Well, it's hermaphrodite. It could be literally anything from a word with one syllable to an entire sentence.
Hermaphrodites.
All right, let's do this.
Good guys two, bad guy two.
Yes, this is enormous here. This could be your first ever victory that we remember.
Listen, stop trying to distract. Let's get to this.
Merce.
Oh, I hate you so much right now.
Merce. 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 Merce.
It's almost like you're taunting me with this
it
now.
It is. Merce. And tickling me.
Merce. Merce.
Taunting you and tickling me.
Merce.
Is it most or is it... Well, that's not my final answer.
Merce.
Mist.
Which is it, Meech?
Merce.
I'm going to go with mist.
It's most.
Oh, oh my God!
Oh, my God! Holy shit! He threw his microphone at a human being!
Sorry, I had to pick up my headphones.
Merce.
You had it!
This is an injustice. That's all I want to say right now. I was robbed.
You were not robbed. You made your own decisions.
That was robbed.
You made your own life choices. You had victory in your hands and you let it go. Unbelievable. Swanted. Stunning. Stunning.
You're getting better at this game.
You are getting better.
Yes. Yes, you better pick it up because I'm going to get my second victory any day soon.
I appreciate you being on with us. Thank you, Meech.
A pleasure. Take care.
Hermaphrodites.
Our thanks to John Amici. Always fun, always enlightening. Next week, we have not decided yet what it is we're going to do, but we have to choose from John Tesh, Bob Saget, and Tom Glavine. So.
White guys! White, 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 white!
Man, man. You get one WNBA player, and all of a sudden you think you have free reign.
I was going to say I didn't know who we were going to have next week, but what we were going to have was someone extraordinarily Caucasian, but I didn't even get to the joke because you played one of our favorite sound.
White guys! Why?
I mean, that is a holy trinity of white guys right there. John Tesh, Bob Saget, and Tom Glavine.
Really puts it over the top.
No, I feel like Glavine puts it over the top. Like, you start with John Tesh, you go to Bob Saget, and then it's Tom Glavine. Christ almighty.
The baseball player who, to change things up, came from hockey.
Give the people a little taste of the Mystery Crate feeling, what it is that people will get with the Mystery Crate if they head over there and support some of the other stuff in the Levitard and Friends Network.
Well, sometimes it's an MLS season preview, but sometimes it's a really good interview with Purple, a Miami nightlife legend. It's driven by the shipping container, Dan, and it's a very self-indulgent podcast. And sometimes we have all sorts of wackiness, and sometimes we have stuff that's thought-provoking. I'm lying. It's never really thought-provoking.
No. What we are asking you, this is the thought-provoking. Over here, that we get John Amici and we say, provoke our thoughts. That's how we do that around here. The rest of it is just banging a bunch of cymbals. But what we want you to do around here to support the things that we do and to keep these things free, because the sponsors are keeping this stuff free. If you want more content creation, rate, subscribe, and review. We will talk to you next week.